You're listening to UCF Knights Talk, a UCF Knights podcast with the Orlando Sentinel's Shannon Green. Get the latest on the hottest topics involving the Knights from our unique perspective. And now, on with the show.
And welcome to another podcast about UCF, brought to you by the Orlando Sentinel. I'm not going to try to get the name right because I always fall over it. I'm Brian Parsons with Matt Michelle, our college football writer, who is de facto UCF beat writer until, I don't even know if de facto, I don't even know if I use it right, but you're filling in for Shannon Green. You've been covering UCF. I don't have my thesaurus in front of me. I'm trying to sound smart.
Stop!
Before we start talking about the UCF game against Memphis this week, we haven't had a chance to look back at UCF's win over Maryland. I think it's something we should do. We talked last week heading into the game. This looked like a winnable game for UCF if they did the things right. I don't think many people could have foreseen how big they would win by and how easily that win came. The passing game continues to do well. I was wondering how much of that was FIU, but Mackenzie Milton looked strong again against Maryland. His passing efficiency is top six in the country. He's thrown for 5 touchdowns. He's only thrown 1 interception. They're averaging 308 yards per game through the air. I don't know if anybody expected this from UCF to be clicking like that this early. 50 points a game through 2 games. I know it's one of them is FIU, but they scored points on Maryland. I didn't see that coming. The things went right. But one of the things that we talked about, as much as all those numbers I just went through, we talked about UCF needing to be able to run the ball against Maryland. And while there wasn't a breakthrough performance, they were able to control the ball through running it and open up that passing game. And I think that was one of the keys offensively for UCF against Maryland, was being able to get some running game going to open up the passing game even more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, their performance, they had 250 yards rushing against Maryland. That was the third best rushing performance in the Scott Frost era, if you think about it. I mean, it was a good, solid run.
Obviously, and a bunch of guys doing it.
Yeah, a bunch of guys doing it. They had 9 different players get a carry in that game. Obviously, Mackenzie Milton, the majority of the carries, majority of the yards, and also, you know, a couple of wide receivers got in there. Traquan Smith and Dredrick Snelson got in as well. But they really were able to use their full array. And once Jawan Hamilton went down, I mean, you know, I think that was a big – when he went down, that first drive, and you know, all we know now is he's gone for the season. It's a lower leg injury. He had surgery. He said he's going to get a medical hardship waiver on it. What you assume, you think initially is, oh, that, you know, we're not going to be able to run the football. And that wasn't the case. They really got Taj McGowan going. He was able to get some runs in there as well. Milton did a good job doing that. I think the biggest takeaway from that game for me is this offensive line is not the offensive line of last year. They have not allowed a sack in the first 2 games. They're giving Milton plenty of time and protection to be able to find the receivers, to be able to get the ball to the guys who are able to make plays. And then in return, that's that running game. In return, they're able to help kind of find some holes. I still think they need to get some gaps. I still think that some of the guys not necessarily are having any of those big runs. We haven't seen one of those big 50, 60, 78, you know, yard runs that we're used to seeing. But all in all, offensively, this group has been really good. I mean, from a short passing game, Milton's probably been his best. He's got 3 of his 5 touchdowns came within 10 yards. Is that red zone offense they've done a really good job of. He's hit some deep throws, too, as well. Looked good in that as well. So everything offensively seems to be humming. And then the defense is probably its strongest part of the team is really good. You saw them get that push up front, and they were able to get some sacks. They were able to get in the backfield and cause some chaos. And in turn, that turns into turnovers, and we saw guys make some interceptions like we saw before.
I know the cynic out there would look and say, yeah, well, you did it against FIU, and you did it against a third-string quarterback from Maryland when their starting quarterback, who was already the backup, went down early in that game. But it's not just the quarterback. The UCF defense, they're only allowing 88 yards rushing per game. They're dominating the line. They're benefiting by playing some maybe not great offenses and a third-string quarterback. But this defense has been the strength of this team, and you could see it against Maryland that they just could never get anything going, could never get anything in a rhythm. Next thing you know, UCF keeps getting it done on offense, and then the game was out of hand, and Maryland could never get into that rhythm. I don't care who you have at quarterback. When you're able to do that on defense, you're going to win football games, and that's what UCF is able to do. Being able to hold these teams like they have, especially on against the run, that we're going to talk about McKenzie Milton, and the numbers look great, but the defense has looked stronger than it has recently. Obviously, it's a better defense than it was two years ago, but I mean, this is becoming a strength on this team, and they, I think, as much as they did against FIU, I thought they really flexed that muscle against Maryland.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things, too, that's really helped them out, especially early on, is they're winning the turnover battle. You know, UCF's only turned the ball over twice so far. That's been good. They can't get sloppy with the football. When you get sloppy and you lose the turnover battle, that's when you get yourselves into trouble. They've been able to do that as well. Again, up front, the group has been good. We know the middle linebacker position is always going to be strong with Shaquem Griffin in there as well. And I think they're secondary. I really feel like they've done a much better job on that secondary than we've seen in quite some time. And there was a group that I think a lot of people were concerned with because there wasn't a lot of experience. You know, Mike Hughes comes over as the transfer from North Carolina, and he's already got an interception return for a touchdown. And he's, you know, you got guys who are making plays that normally weren't maybe making those kind of plays or you were expecting them to. And I think, again, that front line, you know, we talk about Jamias Pittman, you talk about Tony Gerard, you talk about, you know, Tristan Hill. Those guys are getting that push up front. When they get that push, that only just spells good things for this defense.
Before we start talking about the game this week against Memphis, you mentioned the injury to Juwan Hamilton. You don't know what the injury is, but we know it's a leg injury. How does UCF move on from this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I spoke with the running backs coach Ryan Held this afternoon after practice, and he said, listen, our mentality has always been next man up. I think every school will tell you about that. You know, so they've still got a tremendous amount of talent right there in that foundation. You know, Taj McGowan is a guy that they know they can trust to get in the football with. Adrian Killings, we know he can do a lot. He's a kind of an all-around type guy. Otis Anderson, who we've seen a little bit, an incoming freshman who's been used at wide receiver, can come back and do some running, can play running back position as well. He's very multi-talented. They've also got, you know, a couple other guys that they can really move in that spot. So I don't think there's a concern in the sense of we don't have anyone who can step up to make the plays. I don't think they'll change much of what they're doing, you know, when it comes to running the football. But they do definitely need to make sure they stay a little bit more healthier in that position because, you know, that's going to be a key, as you mentioned before. If they can run the football, they can mix things up a little bit. I think that's only going to help Milton buy some time to be able to find those receivers downfield and get guys the ball quicker.
Memphis comes to UCF Saturday night, the first meeting between the two teams since 2013. Of course, this game was scheduled for the second weekend of the season. It was then moved to a Friday night, and then it was then... The last game within the state to be postponed that weekend was this one, with Memphis on the ground in a plane. They had just gotten here, and the game was moved. It was at the time it was canceled. And before we get into talking about the game, Matt, you were able to talk to some folks at the American about what went into the scheduling of this and how they went from this game being canceled to now playing this game and other USF game. Just how did this come about that they were able to find a way to make sure this game was still played this year?
A lot of hard work. I mean, that's basically, you know, listen, if you're really fluent, I got to tell you that most of the guys over at the American are very fluent in Excel right now, spreadsheets. Yes. You know, I was told at one point they use 7 different models, you know, with ideas how to make things work. You know, and Mike Oresko, the conference commissioner, I spoke with him last Saturday, and he said, listen, this only worked because the athletic directors and the school presidents of all these schools involved said it was okay to do it. Because he said, you know, I wasn't going to force anyone to do anything. And he said at some point, if one of these schools had said, we don't want to do this, we don't want to play this game or whatever, he said, we wouldn't have done it. So they said that's really what helped out. He said a lot of it, too, was making sure you move pieces around. They had to lose 3 non-conference games. You know, obviously UCF dropped its main game to supposed to be this weekend to play Memphis. Memphis dropped its Georgia State game. There was a UMass game that got dropped on a schedule as well. I think it was USF. So they had to move some things around. Then they had to find making sure all the stadiums were available because they do have a lot of these schools don't have on-campus stadiums. They got, you know, to share with somebody else. UConn, for instance, last weekend had to play on Sunday because their stadium was being used for an MLS game. So, I mean, they had to do a little bit of that as well and kind of configuring. And then they really had to sit down and see like the financials of it. You know, I mean, the American does have insurance, which will help, from what Mike Oresko told me, will help pay for the cost of you know, dropping those three games, because you do have to pay those buyouts. They said they're going to do that. They also have some reserve funds. The conference does, that they say they will help out. They don't want the schools to feel like they have to pay it, because they feel like this is something they had to do to move everything around. But they felt very much like they needed to get eight conference games. Each school needed to play eight conference games, because what they didn't want to see happen was get into a position where one school had six or seven and one school had eight, and the one with the eight somehow, because of the tiebreakers based on winning percentage, finds itself behind the one that only had played, you know, seven games, and then would be upset about that and maybe didn't have a head-to-head matchup. So they wanted to make sure everything was kind of fair and square. I think that's admirable for what they're trying to do. And it does present some challenges. And, you know, some of the things I was told that had to happen were, you know, one school, you know, basically gave up its hotel, its block of hotel rooms and its buses that they'd rented, you know, gave it up to the school that was being switched out, because they said, we got these, we'll go ahead and give them to you. You can use them for whatever, you know, they paid, you know, they've been set up and reserved. So it took a lot of pieces and it took a lot of time. It was 5 days. I was told hundreds of phone calls, but eventually they got everything down and working out. And obviously UCF and Memphis are very happy to play this game this weekend.
And it is a big conference game. I mean, I know they want eight games for everybody, but this is a team picked to win the West in Memphis. This is a team that is picked to battle in the East, UCF. Mm-hmm. This is a big game, a big crossover divisional game. Memphis comes into this game undefeated with a win over UCLA, where it was the last team to score wins. And Memphis is averaging 43 points a game. We know they can score points under Mike Norvell, second-year coach. Riley Ferguson is their quarterback. He has passed for 8 touchdowns, 783 yards in their games. And this is a Memphis team that's going to test that UCF defense that we just talked all about, because they run the ball very well. They pass the ball very well. It is a very evenly distributed offense, 219 rushing yards per game, 261 passing yards per game. This is not the Memphis of old. So while UCF leads the series 9-1, and when they met in 2013, if you remember that game, that was the Blake Bortles 2 touchdowns and a couple seconds game to rally the Knights. This is not that same Memphis team. This is a very good Memphis team. A Memphis team, as we said, picked to be a contender in the West, which would make you a contender in the conference. They're going to – this will be UCF's first test. Maybe it's good for UCF that it's now. Maybe they wish they got Memphis earlier in the season. That would be something to ask Scott Frost. Either way, they're getting them now. And I think coming off the Maryland game, maybe UCF feels a little bit better about their prospects, at least their fans do. But trying to build off that win against a very good Memphis team Saturday.
Yeah, you know, Scott Frost did talk a little bit about, you know, this 2 weeks ago before Hurricane Irma, these guys were already had the game plan in place. They were already kind of going through the practices. So a lot of the players I spoke with this week said it was nice because you already had that. So it's not being lost. You know, you can come into this week with a little more knowledge of what's going on. They could hit the practice field. There is not this is definitely a game. I'm not going to say a grudge match, but there's a lot of the players feel like this could be a big statement game for them. I know Aaron Evans, the senior offensive lineman, said to me, you know, he wants to put UCF back on the map. You know, he talked about the days of you know, when UCF won the Fiesta Bowl, you know, back in 2013, how people respected UCF nationally and how that became like a big deal. He wants to see that happen again. You know, I mean, obviously that winless season kind of took a luster off this program. He wants to see them get back to that. I guarantee if whoever wins this game on Saturday is probably going to get a lot of votes for the top 25 AP. It could find themselves ranked, you know, which would be
they're
huge.
Both receiving votes as of now.
Yes, so. And so I think there's a chance that whoever wins this game could be that way as well. And I think, you know, but Scott Frost said, you know, earlier this week, yes, it's a big game, but we can't let this become the one game that defines us. I mean, if we lose this game, you can't be, you know, I mean, you can't let it get to the point where it affects your season, because you still have an opportunity to win the East, and you have to go out and play the games as well. So I think what will be interesting is if they can get a crowd. You know, I know our colleague Mike Bianchi's been stumping to deck the spec, you know, is their hashtag, to get fans in this game. They feel like if they can get a sellout, which hasn't happened, I think, in a while, maybe during that festival year, you know, that crowd would they could feed off that energy and would give them something as well. We'll see if it happens. It's a Saturday night game. There shouldn't be any excuses. There's no, it's not too hot. It's not, you know, a Thursday night. It's not a Friday night. It's a Saturday night game. Hopefully they can get a crowd.
And it's a, and it is a game weekend that was already scheduled. So, yes. So there are people that were already planning to be in Orlando. Maybe not as many are planning to go against Maine. But I mean, it's not like a Saturday that, when the schedule came out, UCF fans had already planned to go away on a weekend or whatever. So, yes. I would love to see this place rocking. I think it's, I think there's a momentum right now. And if you're listening to this, you're obviously a UCF fan and you're feeling it too. A momentum from that began last year and is carried over into this year. And it started with FIU, and it may have been slowed a little bit by Irma because they took 3 weeks off. But I didn't seem to lose the team's momentum in the way they played against Maryland. And now, like I said, a statement game that UCF can make, getting Memphis at home. And Memphis, as if you don't know it, UCLA's defense is terrible. They're not that great, but it's a big win to beat UCLA.
Yes.
It's a big win to beat Maryland, but this is a Memphis team that beating them will go a long way toward UCF earning at least that respect back that they're looking for. You talk about wanting to get that back. This would be a great chance to do it. It'd be a great chance to see the fans out there making that place as loud as it can be. I've been in it when it is packed and loud. If that happens on Saturday, that just adds to the chances, I think, of UCF winning this game.
Yeah, and I mean, the players, I ask a lot of the players about it too. You know, what would it mean for them? And they talked about how it would just be unreal for them to come out, you know, and see the crowd and hear the, you know, and the stomping up and down and the bounce house going. And I think they feel like that would really help feed them as well, you know. And it's not like it's going to determine whether they win or lose the game. But, I mean, I think it definitely could be a huge factor going on. And then, you know, again, as we mentioned, UCLA is a horrible defense. You know, Riley Ferguson from Memphis, quarterback, was able to pick them apart for 6 touchdowns in that game. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen against – I think UCF's defense is way better than that. I think it's going to be tough for them. And, again, it's being on the road. But a win over a program like Memphis continues to move you on and kind of elevate what Scott Frost is trying to do here at UCF.
And if none of that works, just turn off the AC in the locker room.
Do they have AC?
We just brought it full circle.
Full circle from the first podcast. Full circle
from the start.
Listen to the other podcast.
Oh, that's right. That's the other. That's right. That wasn't that. That was the other podcast. We've done 2 podcasts, so it wasn't full circle. You didn't get the joke. The joke is about Michigan and Purdue and not having AC in the locker room. But yeah, UCF fans, I know everybody listening to this, you're going to be at the game. Make sure you're getting all your neighbors out, your friends. Drag everybody you can possibly can to the stadium on Saturday night. Let's make this big. Let's make it fun. And Matt will be out there covering it, and it'll be more fun for you if there's a lot of people there, as long as you still get your parking and get in. But after that, make the place loud and remarkable for this game. And we will talk about this game afterwards. We'll make sure to get a podcast post-Memphis to talk about what happens on Saturday night here in Orlando. For Matt Michelle, I am Brant Parsons, continuing listening all season long as we talk UCF by subscribing to this podcast and listening to it when it pops up in your feed. We thank you for listening, and charge on, folks.
Thank you for listening to UCF Knights Talk, your podcast home for the latest on the UCF Knights. For more UCF coverage, visit OrlandoSentinel.com. Subscribe to this podcast, share it on social media, and review it on iTunes.